Gary.
All right. I'm Greg. I'm a daddy. And I want to thank the committee for taking a chance on an addict like me with the responsibility of sharing at a workshop as important as this one. And, excuse me. Well, where you at? The workshop already started, man. What's going on? All right, look. We talk about that after the workshop. Okay? I hope y'all thought that was just as ridiculous as it looked. Part of our history is remembering, I don't know if y'all can remember, but I remember a time when we used to be able to sit through a whole Narcotics Anonymous meeting. We didn't have to send a text, get a text, email, voicemail, any of that. And I'm saying that because it's important that the new person know that you don't have to have a cell phone to recover. You know, if y'all look at where we have gone from flexing to texting. We done gone from geeking to tweeting. And we done stopped smoking hash just to go to hashtags. If we're not careful, and this is about the history of NA, if we're not careful, we will change the whole language of this fellowship. Titus, did you do your fourth step? Yeah, but it's up in the clouds. I mean, I can't find it. Did you make that meeting last night, sister? No, but I'll catch it on YouTube. We're laughing. But if you look and you can remember a time when our media statement did not have to say all of that stuff about taking pictures and social media and all that. This is the most clean, pristine, pure environment that we will be in today inside a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous. And so to kind of keep our history clear, and I was talking to David, I'm so glad it's somebody I know, because trust me, both of us are old, and I had to do I just don't remember like I used to. And so I'm going to ask y'all to help me. It's time, sponsor, I need to do some six-step work, you know. Because I found in the sixth step that when you become entirely ready, not half-ass ready, not thinking you're ready, not asking your sponsor if you're ready, but when you become entirely ready to have the Creator remove all your defects of character, what the Creator will do is put you in positions where you become the people that you used to talk about. And I remember when people used to come up to the podium, they'd have 3, 4, 5 books, you know, and I'd be back there. I know I'm the only one that did this, right? I'd be back there, look at them, man. They ought to know what they're going to say. They don't need to be looking at no text. Trust me. Let your ass get old. I can't remember. So I have a couple things that I'm actually going to ask you guys to bear with me. And I'll read from here, you know, unless you tell me to go on, you know. I'm just going to stop. And what I want to clarify first is there's a part of our readings that says that we are under no surveillance at any time. Well, that's not entirely true. We got a secret group that infects every NA meeting. You won't hear about them until after you step outside, and then they'll step to you and try to straighten some shit. We call them the NA police. We're always under their surveillance. So my disclaimer is, listen, I didn't just wake up one morning and come up with this information on my own. It wasn't a good idea. It was like when the committee asked me, and I said, oh, yeah, okay, I'll do the history of NA, sure. And then I realized, damn. And then the words of Mark came in, and one of my old mentors, he used to say, why would you want to be a part of an organization that you don't know a damn thing about? I was like, So I did the research. And so anything that you might hear me spread out here today, you can go find it. It's available if you look hard enough. But what you will find when you start researching the history of NA is one of the key themes is that there is no organized history of NA. You got so many different sources saying so many different things that you have the freedom to go and look and find this information for yourself. And that is probably the only advantage of our fellowship to technology, is because this stuff is available online. It is available. But you just have to kind of look through it and sort through it. So, I'm going to start this off. And just to go back, you know, Narcotics Anonymous, I'm here to tell you that if you knew and you want to know something about the history of Narcotics Anonymous, go to your home group or any group and claim to know something about Narcotics Anonymous. And old Tom is going to step to you. And invariably, they're going to start off with, well, I was at the first meeting with Jimmy K. I started the first home group. I helped write the traditions. You need to sort through that, because eventually, if you stick around here long enough, you'll run into some of those people. I just ran into Clyde outside, you know. He hosted one of the first meetings that Jimmy K was actually the speaker at, you know. But I can't wave that as a banner because I wasn't there, you know. But I trust this person enough to know that that's fact, at least in my world, you know. And you have to decide what's fact for you and how it's going to help you in your recovery. So there was a time that we think of Narcotics Anonymous as beginning in 1953. Listen, there were meetings of Narcotics Anonymous as early as 1949. There were, when Lexington, Kentucky used to be a drug treatment facility, you know. And even for some of you that are familiar with this area, there were meetings that were called LOTROL, which is Lorton spelled backwards. This is in our history, you know, this is not conjecture. And what happened was, we still didn't have the name Narcotics Anonymous. You know, we were Addicts Anonymous. And I was sharing with somebody the other day, as it had gotten so convoluted that there used to be AA/AA meetings. And people didn't know which meeting they were going to. So invariably, what the leader of the meeting would do is the leader would say, how many people in here are alcoholics? Raise their hand. How many people in here are addicts? You raise their hand. Whichever number was the greater, that was the kind of meeting that would be. And, I mean, that's where we came from. You know, we struggled. You know, in our literature, you know, when we're busy visiting with our neighbors, you know, the part that says their hard-fought experience, it was hard. And so, one of the first meetings, an NA meeting, because there were plenty of NAs. I need to be clear about that. I'm not talking about NA as we know it today. I'm just talking about the NAs. They were calling themselves NA meetings. And a guy named Danny C., who had just gotten out of Lexington, started a meeting, 1949. And it was in New York, I think it was in the women's correctional facility, you know. But what happened was there were no traditions, you know. And that first meeting, I thought y'all might get a kick out of this. That first meeting was operated under what some of you, now if you knew when I talk about the 13 steps, I'm not talking about that one that we commonly talk about, you know. Yes, sister, you know what I'm talking about, right? When we initially started that first meeting, there were 13 steps. So like I said, I'm going to just read the first three, unless y'all tell me you must go on, okay? The first three. Number one, admit the use of narcotics made my life seem more tolerable, but the drug had become an undesirable power over my life. That was our first step. Step two, came to realize that to face life without drugs, I must develop an inner strength. And step three, made a decision to face the suffering of withdrawal. You know, I must. Step four, learn to accept my fears without drugs. Step five, find someone who has progressed this far and who is able to assist me.
Wow.
Step 6, admit to him the nature and depth of my addiction. Step 7, realize the seriousness of my shortcomings as I know them and accept the responsibility of facing them. 8, admit before a group of NA members these shortcomings and explain how I am trying to overcome them. Number 9, list my own understanding of all the persons I have hurt. 10, take a daily inventory of my actions and admit to myself these which are contrary to good conscience. 11, realize that to maintain freedom from drugs, I must share with others the experience from which I have benefited. And 12, determine a purpose in life and try with all the spiritual and physical power within me to move toward its fulfillment. And then the 13th step was just, God help me. Ouch. That's where we came from. And so, like I said, you know, that was in 1949. But then, of course, what happened was, through divine intervention, and thank Jimmy Kay and all of our predecessors, because what was happening was Jimmy Kay was having daily conversation with Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson. And like I said, you know, if the police got their pads out, they might want to write this down, that I said this, that back when the Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, because that's the only place we had to go, you know. And so what had happened was we were going to those meetings, but the folk were feeling uncomfortable. You know, it was just a conflict. And so Jimmy went to Bob and Bill, and like I said, they kind of got together. And what happened was we got permission to borrow the 12 steps and 12 traditions. You have to believe me. Just look at the bottom of the gray sheet that we read. You know, before it says, after you say over, you know, you'll see at the bottom it says, as borrowed with permission from World Services, Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and sometimes, you know, we have a spirit of cooperation, but not affiliation. There's a big difference. You know, we need to understand that when people came in here, they didn't have the luxury that we have today of going down to Ocean City and having 6,000 other addicts down there, you know, that we could just act like we just popped up and nobody fought hard to get so that we could be where we are today. And so what happened was when they went and they borrowed the 12 steps and 12 traditions, and I am biased because I think when we borrowed these 12 steps and we reworded the first step, it made our fellowship the most powerful 12-step fellowship on the planet, because we admitted we were powerless over our addiction, which is non-substance or behavior specific. That means whatever you're doing, if it's kicking your ass and you can't stop, you belong in here. It also means that it takes us out of the judgment business. Because if you didn't shoot dope, smoke crack, trick, nut, if you didn't do any of that, and you're here, guess what? You belong in Narcotics Anonymous. And so that was part of a little bit of our history. And now, I'm going to bring this forward because I think David's going to talk about a little bit of this, because we kind of shared this before. The program of Narcotics Anonymous as we know it was officially founded in 1953. There's recorded history, you know, and there are people here alive that were at that meeting. You know, I've been around, I had 22 years in June, but from going to different conventions and following with our traditions, you know, the part of traditions where it says we gather information as we talk to members and visit various groups. That don't mean the group down the street because you got a resentment for, you know, the woman that you just left. It means go to one of those meetings where the people don't look like you. Go to the one of those meetings where the people don't feel like you do about certain other things that they do. Go to those meetings and you'll find that you'll run into people whose stories are in the basic text. You know, a good friend of mine, his story is in there. I didn't know that, you know, because of his humility. I've been hanging out with him for years and never knew that that's who it was. You know, but that's when you start to find out what our history is and how real it is from the people who were there. You know, now what we can talk about is, what about your history? You contribute to the history of Narcotics Anonymous. But we also have to be careful that in our arrogance, we don't beat people over the head with the 12-step hammer, you know, and try to make them get this. You know, ain't none of our business who's supposed to get this. And we also have to be careful that we don't carry a message seemingly trying to do good that's actually detrimental to our own history. You ever been in, you know, halftime, and Joe and Joe celebrating, and Josh celebrating, and there's a meeting at so and so and so, and it's in dire need of support? No, it's not. That's like saying Rudolph got the good dope on the corner and ain't nobody buying it. Listen, we meet the needs of the community. The community doesn't meet our needs. If there's a meeting and there's a need for that meeting, people are going to show up. We just want it to look like the biggest meeting in our area the first day it opened, the doors open. Then we get a resentment because there ain't nobody coming. So we go to one of the popular meetings and ask folk, look, because this is basically what we're saying when we say a meeting's in dire need of support. What we're saying is, stop going to your meeting and come to this meeting. You know, one of the biggest meetings in the D.C. area used to be at the VA hospital on Friday night. That was the place to be. Everybody got up at the podium and you need to get in service and you need to do this and you need it. Well, guess what? That's what the newcomers started doing. They went to other meetings, they got in service, and eventually the meeting died. But that's exactly what it was supposed to do. Eventually that meeting started back up and now it's still one of the biggest meetings. So we can create some history and inadvertently create a mess and not realize that. You know, and we can also pass on some bad information. Have you guys ever heard somebody say, well, you know, when I came around, you know, to read the third tradition, and they'll say, well, when I came around, it used to say honest desire. Never said that. Third tradition never said that. Oh, yeah, and I had an old time beat me up, you know. What happened was, in 1958, the World Services Board of Alcoholics Anonymous decided to take the word honest desire out of their preamble. And when they did that, they wrote, and we have decided that we're going to remove this phrase from our traditions. They meant the whole traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous, preamble, steps. But a lot of alcoholics just took it to mean that we're taking it out of the third tradition. It's never in there. So I'm saying, if you hear people sharing stuff, even me, and I'll tell you this, if you've ever heard me share the podium, when I tell you, man, if you didn't understand something I said, step to me afterwards and say, what the hell were you talking about? Now, the people that are loving and caring in this fellowship are going to give you an answer. And if they can't give you an answer, they're going to send you to somebody that will give you an answer. You know, so we can create a history, because this is a growing, living thing. Our literature, and I'm not disparaging, you know, any place that anybody else has to go one day a week, but if you notice, our literature is constantly changing. It didn't just go with the White Panther and stop. It didn't just go with the basic text. What are we up now in the sixth edition? Okay. It didn't just go with It Works High and Wide. It didn't just stop with Step Working Guide. So I'm saying we are moving, man. You know, and I'm saying we inadvertently passed some stuff on, just like when I came around, men get with the men, women get with the women. Okay, that sounds fine. I suppose you're a man that's trying to get with a man. Did they take that into consideration? But I'm saying, as a fellowship, we have grown to where we are all inclusive. We don't care. You know, I'm talking about our literature that is a lot kinder to us than we are to it. Because I think our literature said, we don't care who you are, what your sexual orientation is, where you come from, what you got, what you had. But, you know, we can have that selective amnesia, and we forget that in the meeting. You know, we act like, well, how come they got to have a special meeting? Because they got special needs. You know, I'm fortunate enough to sponsor women. Listen, when women come to me with some women issues, I send them to the women that I trust will give them the information that they need. If they come to me with some information about the steps, and I'm on it. There are people here to sponsor people that don't have kids. If they come to you with an issue about your kid, don't try to tell them about their kids. Send them to somebody that has a healthy relationship with their kids. You know, so our history in here is what we make it. You know, we have just as much responsibility to participate in this history as anybody else. And when you come in here and you say you're a member of Narcotics Anonymous, that means you get all the benefits of this program. You don't have to do a step a year. I heard that. And I thought that was the most ridiculous shit I ever heard. You know, because I was saying, you mean I got to wait 11 years to improve my conscious contact with God? Man. You know, but I mean, that's the kind of stuff we pass on. And it sounds good. You know, it sounds good. Well, God won't give you no more than you can handle. Well, I couldn't handle dope. But then on the other hand, I'll say, well, God works through people. But then when am I going to start trusting them people and let God do his work through those people? You know, so I'm just saying, man, we have to be very careful in what we pass on here as fact. When the information is there, our literature is already in place. I don't know about you guys, but when I was a kid, I knew BED was a place I did not want to go. Y'all remember them days, Eric, you know, when your mother said, you know, it's time for him to go to BED. I already knew where that was. You know, I'm just saying we got to be careful in our language. I'm trying to be funny, you know, because this is serious stuff. But we can't take it too seriously, you know, in the sense that somebody's actually afraid to try to get this. So, you know, I'm just overjoyed in being here. And me and David were talking, and I won't share his story, but I just realized that it's... What is it, 9 years I'm cancer-free, David? Yeah. Man, listen. Trust me. That might not seem like a big deal, but whenever you're faced with mortality, and I'll share this in close, I remember when I first got diagnosed, and the doctor was looking at me, and she was saying, well, you know you have cellular carcinoid, you know. And my immediate thought was, because this was in August, and my immediate thought was, damn, I wonder if I'm going to be able to go to Ocean City. You know how powerful this place is? I mean, this person has just told me there is a good possibility that you're going to die. And I'm thinking about, well, maybe not before Ocean City. You know what I'm saying? Because I needed to get down here with y'all. You know? And so I got a couple minutes, and the irony about Ocean City is I actually grew up right on the other side of the bridge, Annapolis, Maryland. But that was just too slow a town for me. And I remember not being able to come over to Ocean City because it was too far. I ain't know nobody over here. I wasn't going to get sick coming over that bridge. I wasn't, you know. And the irony of Narcotics Anonymous, the CPRNA, this area, it took y'all to get me to come over that bridge. You know, so I'm thankful. Thank y'all. That's what I got. I'm sticking to it.